You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, welcome to The Crossover at the Final Four. This is Joe R. Lucas coming to you from Lanxess Arena in Cologne, Germany. And I'm here with some very distinguished guests, as we can see. And I don't know what it looks like in your screen, but on my screen to my left is the man, one of the guys that I followed. I can remember following him my whole life. When I was a kid, he was young. We were playing in college more or less together, but he just played at a real college. I played at a normal college. Mr. David Rivers, you came over here and dominated in Europe, and you're still here living in Italy, my man.
Yeah, good to be with you. Good to be with you, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Down to my lower left is Mr. Turkey, is what I call him, man. Every time I look at this guy's stats, every time I go through Wikipedia, every time I see anything, Sinan, you played in every team in Turkey for like, what, 30 years or something? You've been on every team at least three times.
15 years for sure. And I've been, I played in every team in Istanbul, that's for sure.
Every team in Istanbul, without a doubt. Yes. How many total teams were there if you count them all?
There's probably more than, 10, 15, but they're all smaller clubs. But in the professional level, I think in the first division, we had total seven teams in Istanbul.
Wow. And now to my right, I'm not sure where he's coming for you guys is, and I see the shirt. I see the Maccabi Tel Aviv sign there. Are you still in Tel Aviv, coach?
Yes, of course. We have to participate in the playoffs starting on Monday.
Still playing in the playoffs. Where are you, right in the beginning of the playoff season?
We will start on Monday. We play the day before yesterday, the cup final. We won the cup here, the Israeli cup. And now today we start our preparation for the playoffs.
Coach Giannis Svaropa Daske is you've already been under crossover, so you know what this is all about, but this is a little bit different format because we're going to talk about this Final Four. And man, I know there's no fans. I know we've been through Corona. I know, Coach, you've struggled throughout the year to keep your team healthy, to go through all the protocols that had to be so difficult throughout the season. But the two games that we saw yesterday, I mean, it's like you almost didn't miss fans. You know how much it would have meant to have the fans in the stands to watch those two incredible games. But it's almost like when you were there, you didn't miss them. I want to start with the Milan-Barcelona game. What did you guys think? It was like a boxing match, man. David, it's like old school, like you score, I score, you score, I score. And everybody talked about defense, Barcelona's defense. It was a low scoring game and both teams were going off in the first half.
Yeah, I actually had Milano winning this game.
I did. I thought the same thing.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I think Barcelona pulled it out because they stayed true to themselves. They were more consistent from my viewpoint. But, great game. And I had the thought, the place would be going crazy if fans were at that game, both games, actually. So it was good, good viewing.
Coach, there was a moment, and I talked to Saras about this after the game when I questioned them. There was a moment when they were down like 9 or 10. I remember it being 67-60, and he had none of his stars in the game. Mirotić was on the bench. Higgins, of course, was on the bench with four fouls. Gasol wasn't out there. And he went with a team that looked like almost like a team of, I mean, they're good players, Claver, Smith, these are good players, but they're role players now. And do you think that was a strategy that he came out with? Said, look, I'm going to take my stars out and let these guys grind it out. Because you're down seven. That's a gutsy move.
It's a tough decision, of course. But Saras knows better his players. And I think that he knew that with his role players, he can turn the game around through his defense. I think he changed his defense. They start to play switching defense. He wanted big bodies, and hustling plays on defense. That's why he used this type of lineups that would support his strategy plan. And I think this is how they came back to the game. This is how slowly they cut down the difference, mainly from their defense. And then when they came together, for sure he put the players that he was thinking that in that moment they should produce better on offense.
You know, all three of you guys and myself, we all know that our philosophy is you're only as good as your last game, you know, because there's always the next game coming up. And I was sitting there thinking as I'm watching the game, I'm like, man, if this backfires on him and they go down, instead of coming back into that game, they go down 15 with that lineup in, I could just imagine what the press was going to be talking about. His, you know, first Final Four, big team. You know, you guys, you coaches have it difficult, man, because it's one good decision, you're great, and one bad decision, you're nothing.
You are absolutely right. You know, coaches are judged from their decisions. I think sometimes in the game you need to take a tough decision to change your plan and your strategy, to have a plan B first of all, and to follow this plan B. But to me, the most important is that this showed that Saras is believing in all of his players. Doesn't matter if they are big names or if they are not great names. But we cannot say that Barcelona doesn't have big names. But I mean, you know what I mean. Some guys that are the go-to guys in Barcelona. Some they are part of the system. So I think his decision was tough, but for sure he knew that his players better than all of us that we are outside of the team. He counted on them, and he trusted them, and they saw him back this this confidence that he had on them.
Sinan, it was Higgins steps out of the game. He was having an okay game. He wasn't having a game that you expect from him, but he was pretty smooth in the beginning. He got away from his game a little bit. Got four fouls. Was on the bench. As an ex player, man, and I asked him this also yesterday. I'm like, man, what's it feel like when you're watching the lead slip away? You're on the bench with that fourth foul and you can't get back out on the floor. And you know, like coach is saying, you trust your coach and make the right decision, but yet you're sitting there going, man, put me back in, man. Come on, just get me. I'm not going to make the fifth foul. What do you think is going through his mind at that point in the game?
Well, for sure. First of all, the seat's probably on fire at that point. He wants to get off the seat and get into play. And second, not only he can't, like the connection between the coach and the players, it all depends on the energy of the game. You know, both David and coach said perfect things. The consistency and the momentum was shifting away from Barcelona. And with the lineup that they played with, Barcelona start gaining the momentum and Milan tried to finish the game off quick. I think that was the thing that kind of turned the game around, where they wanted to finish the game off. And as David said, Barcelona kept on to their game plan. And for Corey, the best part is just be there at the right moment. First of all, I think it's a big rebound that he took and make sure that he got the right play in. But as I said, you know, when you're agitated in a sense with the four fouls, you don't want to go out and gamble. But at the same time, you want to make sure that the team wins. At that point, probably he's at the same time trusting his teammates on the court to put the right energy to bring the momentum back to the team.
But you're one of the things I thought of, and this is either one of the three of you, is if Calatas doesn't go down and get hurt, is that ball in Higgins' hands at the end of the game, or is it in Calatas' hands? Because you're not trusting Nick to make that three as much as you are Higgins. Let's be honest here.
That ball was in the point guard's hand.
it would have been, right?
No question, because you're talking about one of the most unselfish players to play the game at this level, who can score when he needs to score. But that ball being in Calatas' hands basically makes all the other four players a threat for that shot. Because he's gonna look for the best shot.
I don't want to get away from, I mean, we're going to talk about that last shot in a second. I don't want to get away from Coach Messina, because Coach Messina did an incredible job. He was pissed, to say the least, at halftime. He was not happy with his team. He gave up, not only did they give up 51 points, and I asked him, I said, Coach, I said, you gave up 51 points. I said, with 30 seconds left in the second quarter, your team only had two team fouls. I said, and you know, so he changed the attitude of his team. He made them come out more aggressive. But in the end, even though it wasn't a defensive game, it was Barcelona's defense that just clamped down within those 2 or 3 minutes that changed everything. But Coach Messina, I mean, he brought his team back into the game.
I think the crucial part, the crucial moment was the beginning of the second half for Armani. And being down with 9 points, they should change the way of playing, because allowing 51 points in the first half is not the style of Armani. Right. And this is what exactly happened. Coach Messina turned it around with convincing the players that they should play more aggressive on defense and put their bodies. This is what we've seen in the beginning. Everybody was committed, more aggressive, tough, with hands on the ball. And they start to come back after good defenses and transition plays that they had some easy baskets on transition. And this helped also some of the players, main players, to get hot, like Panther, that in the beginning of the second half was very crucial. And all the second half was amazing, playing against the tough defense of Barcelona. There was a moment tactically that when Barcelona was switching the pick and rolls, Armani turned to shooting actions and not on pick and roll actions. And this is how they continue with Panther hitting from the curls coming out of the screens. And Panther made also one very important 3-point shot when it was 82-79, 1.5 minutes before the end, tying the game. And from that moment, you know, the most lucky, I can say also, not only capable, but also lucky, would have won the game, because we saw Panther having another open three shot before the shot of Higgins. But as you said, Higgins has the personality, is the player that step up, took the most important shot of the game and made the game to bring Barcelona to the final of the championship.
Give me your three opinions. It was obviously the only shot he could take pretty much at that time, but was it lucky?
No.
I don't think it was luck.
You don't think it was luck?
No.
The body language would lead me to believe that he was very confident.
Yes.
I love him, man. He's so smooth.
And Corey has this left pull-up. You know, yeah. He's very good on every left pull-up that the defense gives him.
Most of us right-handed shooters are better going to our left anyways. Yeah, but exactly. But what about Punter, man? I mean, wasn't he fun to watch or not? You played back in the day. You know, you're not as old as me, but David, we love to watch people just take over games. I mean, that's like old school basketball.
Absolutely. I think he was a little frustrated at different times because he was in a rhythm, and I don't think the ball found his way to him maybe as much as he would have liked. But you know, it was great. It was great watching him play. And like I said, I had them to win it because of their talent, overall talent, and the experience.
Right.
But it was a great, great game to watch on TV. It would have been even better if fans would have been able to see it live in person.
For sure.
No doubt. Let's move on.
I want to add that for Barcelona team, we saw again the good days of Mirotic. And I think he was very crucial for them because, as you remember, Mirotic had around 17 points average in the regular season, but dropped down to close to 9 points, 8.6 points average in the playoffs. During the playoff games, he was not so effective for his team, but we saw him in this crucial moment for his team stepping out and getting a lot of personal responsibility for the team. He was also important at the end when it was the game was hot and Barcelona post him a lot to try to score from the post or to get to the line from the post. And this is exactly what he did. And from the other side, as you said before, the absence of Kalathis at the end, I don't know, Kalathis was also in a good day and he scored a lot. He had also from outside shooting yesterday, good percentages, 40%. He had 6 assists. He started the game really well with 4 points and 5 assists in the first period. And in general, always Kalathis, as David said, makes his teammates better. So I don't know if this will affect Barcelona to the final game.
Sinan, as coach is saying, the big topic here this week, during the week before the game, was Mišić getting the MVP over Mirotić. And a lot of people have talked about the fact that because you include the playoffs, it's not a regular season MVP award. If it was a regular season MVP award, it would have probably been Mirotić. But since they included the playoff, as coach just explained to us, his average dropped. He didn't play that well in the playoffs. And he's had a little bit, I'm trying to tread lightly right now, but he's had a little bit of a reputation of not showing up in big games. Do you think that it was, yesterday was his day? Was it had anything to do with him not winning the MVP? Or is he just like, I'm so sick of hearing people tell me I don't show up for big games that I'm just going to go out from the first minute and play hard?
Well, I think that it's a combination of both and everything because, you know, everybody's talking about how much of an impact that he's going to make in the EuroLeague basketball after coming from the NBA. And there are a lot of expectations from Barcelona. There's a lot of expectation from basketball fans. So it's a combination of both things and some more when you come to this point. And for me, you know, even though like I had the chance to experience 2 Final Fours and both of them, one of them I was out on the bleachers and the other one I was on the bench with the team. But still, it's like, it's a time to enjoy. It's time to show what you're capable of, no matter what the score is. And we saw a lot of this in the main players as a sense in both games. And I think Mirotić had a great game. And he's basically the locomotive of the team with, you know, adding Kalathis as the leader of the team and sharing and making everybody better. So I think he's doing what he's supposed to do. And there's always some kind of burden on his shoulders and expectations coming.
I'd like to add
go
on,
ahead, David.
Joe, at the end of the day, you know, Mirotić, when you talk about his points dropping off, okay, that's one thing, but you don't see him going off the deep end and becoming completely and totally ineffective. Mm-hmm. You have to give him credit in that he's sticking with it. And as coach pointed out, he had some very key moments where they went to him and he was able to deliver, even though he didn't get the 17 or the 20 points. And that's something that that I took note of, but he has to play better on Sunday to win.
Yeah, he had a huge play. I don't know if you remember. I think it was Punter or I can't remember, Lede maybe went up for a rebound and it looked like he jumped a little bit too early and the ball hung up there a little bit high and he picked up that offensive rebound. And that's just part of being aggressive because you're there in the play, because that's an easy play to give up on, you know, start running back on defense. But, you know, he had that attack mode through the whole night, and I thought that was a big thing for him. It's time-wise, let's get to the next game. I got to go down to my bottom left here since I'm talking Mr. Istanbul down here. I want to get right to the punch. I don't want to waste any time with it, as I think it's the thing that we're going to talk about the most. How does Efes continue to blow 20-point leads on a constant? And I'm saying a constant basis. We're talking about the last 3 games of the Real Madrid playoff. They beat Madrid by 26 2 games before the last round of the season. They beat Madrid by 20 the first game at home. They beat Madrid by 23 the second game at home. Madrid never even had the lead. All of a sudden, this team who is averaging 90 something points a game from January 1st in the calendar year 2021 was being shut down, and we saw the same tendency tonight. Sinan, what explain it to me, because I can't. I have my philosophy, I have my thought process, but I want to hear it from you guys.
Well, I was telling that to my wife. With 4.5 minutes left in Real Madrid game three in Madrid, that Rudy hit a 3-point from the corner. And I just said, they might lose the series from this shot. And it appeared that way because the rest of the series happened to be a battle against how to react to what Madrid is showing to them. We cannot oversee the talent that FS has as far as offensive talent goes. And we know each and every player's role is, but there comes a point where it's a 20-point lead. They're getting more relaxed. The main players, especially Misic and Larkin, they're lowering their gear while Cesca comes out with a shorter lineup and start attacking them, beat them up. Real Madrid comes out with an extended version of a matchup zone where they cannot find the tempo. And with every miss, the opponent gets an easier bucket. Cesca did it yesterday, showed it many times. And I think that then with losing that rhythm, then they cannot find the solution that they wanted to do. And we know that FS plays even better when the other players are involved in scoring. Right. That gives a lot of opportunities for Misic and Larkin to operate. I think that's what happens every mid third quarter. They just stop playing somehow and they need to figure out that. And I think Simon said it the best, you know, at one point they were just looking at the clock and they were watching it wind down and they managed to survive that one.
You know, I'm going to try to make a funny analogy here, but in those moments of the game, they look like a little kid that's not getting their toy. They're a little kid that doesn't get their you know, the piece of candy that they want, you know, and they get so frustrated and they can't figure out what's going on and why the game is not coming to them the same way. And coach, I want to go over to you right now because Madrid did come out with an obvious, they went 1-2-2 full court, they went 1-2-2 half court, and then they went to like a 1-2-2, which you know Pablo Laso's been doing for years. He used to do it with Marcus Slaughter all the time when Marcus was that point. And he hasn't done it over the years, and he did it there. And other teams, in game 4 and 5, he didn't do it as much. Or game 5, he didn't do it as much. But what happened at the end of the game was the ball gets into Mitz's hand. The ball gets into Larkin's hand at the end of the game. And what happens is they see the isolation, and I watched it last night with Mosca. It was like the two guys that were playing the wing players, you know, when the ball doesn't move, it's so much easier to play help defense. And it automatically develops into a pseudo 1-2-2 zone defense. And you saw Hackett get the steal. You saw I can't remember who else got the steal. And they were, like you said, Sinan, they were turning the ball over and Cesca was getting easier baskets. How does Coach Adaman break this isolation game at the end and continue to flow offensively like they do in the first half?
You know, we are talking about Madrid's 1-2-2 zone, and it's similar with the switching defense what we've seen a lot of times in these two games, but also in general lately in EuroLeague, that a lot of teams, they try to break the production and the organization of the opponent's offense using the switching defense that blocks the drive and kick game a lot, blocks a lot the after the heads out or the flat defense, the pass and extra pass and the movement of the ball. They want exactly what you said, to isolate the plays, to keep the ball in one player's hands, and all the defense to be focused while the ball is not moving, how to defend one player. And this is exactly what is happening lately. From my point, the offensive team needs to find ways to move the ball. First of all, with the inside game, trying to find the inside mismatch and from inside to attack. And if they trap the inside mismatch, then to play the inside out game. And with this way, you move the defense and you move the ball. And this is how you need to execute from inside out. But also, let's say there are some tricks that you can do when the one player has the ball for the outside mismatch, that you can have some flare screens or some movement away from the ball that will give the chance to the player with the ball to find the open looks. So I think all the teams now will work better on these situations. I think these are special situations because the game, the flow of the game moves now to the isolations. So we need to find ways as coaches and players together with the players how we will find the best option and for the player that will be open to shoot the ball. I think the ways to use some off-ball movement while the player is attacking the outside mismatch and, of course, to attack from the inside mismatch.
I think, David, it's so important. And I think what Coach was just saying is a way to do it, but you have to find a way, especially Efes, that all four or five guys that are on the floor touch the ball in every possession, because that's when they become so dangerous, because what they're doing – when everybody touches the ball, they're moving the defense. And the defense isn't stagnant anymore. It's not sitting there waiting for a penetration. And that's, you know, I've seen Misic come off of pick so often, or Larkin come off a pick and penetrate through the middle. And that's what's getting shut down. How do they get all five guys to touch that ball when they're so stagnant?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, they got stagnant yesterday because, as Sinan said, Coach alluded to, they started watching the clock. They started watching the clock and they took their foot off the gas. And whenever you do that, it's hard to regain the momentum that you established from the outset of the game. They got very lucky yesterday, FS. They got very lucky. And I think because of what they experienced yesterday, they're probably going to play a lot better on Sunday. But at the end of the day, I'm glad to hear Coach talk about starting the game from the inside out, because that's something that I was taught since I was able to identify a ball.
And you're a point guard.
I'm a firm believer in that, because at the end of the day, you start that game from the inside out. Number one, you're getting that ball close to the rim. And with guys that can move like FS have, you know, over the course of the game, they're going to find opportunities. They're going to find their touches. So I think it's critical to get that inside game established. But the biggest takeaway that I had yesterday in watching that FS-Chesica game was the fact that FS came out and really put their fingerprint on the defense. I thought that was setting the tone right then and there. And then the offense flowed. But when they got up 20 plus points, they all just kind of sat back and was just watching the clock.
But
meanwhile, Chesica, I think if the more desperate their situation got, the more aggressive they got. Mm. Imagine if Chesica has started the game the way that they had started playing in mid third and fourth quarter. It probably would have been a different outcome.
David, you opened up my eyes to something that I forgot about, because that's what I was most impressed with. Sinan, I'll go to you in this. Was Efes' defense in the beginning of the game? They stifled Cheska's offense. They couldn't get an open look at the basket. There was a couple turnovers. They weren't those bad turnovers that led to like easy fast break points, but there were turnovers that were devastating to them. It was so frustrating, but it was the Turkish defense that was actually winning that game. Like David said, it helped. You know, defense turns into offense. We all know that. Most of us that play, most people like to say that offense make. I used to say offense made me a better defensive player, but that was just a lie. You know, that was something to say. But we all know that defense turns into offense, and that's what happened with Efes yesterday.
Yes, for sure. And I think, you know, both sides of the game feeds each other. When you see how Efes started off the game, they start finding the solutions with the mismatches, looking inside mostly. Mm. And, you know, they hit 5 or 6 3 points in the first quarter. And that gave them energy to play more aggressive defense. And they want to of course, get excited and get, they want to blow the game out. But at the end, they start getting stops. They start missing shots. That affected their defense because it's easy bucket coming to the other way. They turn the ball over. And I think, you know, FS actually, when they find the right lineups, they figure out how to close the three-point line and make that defense as tough as possible. But that they feed off from offense a lot to play that defense also.
I'm looking at the screen. I see four like basketball purists. You know, where you know, coach has to be a little bit more new school because he has no other choice. But you know, the rest of us are a little bit old school. Even though coach has still got the old school left in him. Now I know you got Shane Larkin, I know you got Misic, I know you got everybody. But the new, can we all, is everybody else have a man crush like I do on Krunoslav Simon? He's my favorite player. I mean, he's the piece that makes that team work. I love this guy.
Simon is very experienced and he knows how to, from one side to score, from the other side to create for his teammates. And this makes him really dangerous for every defense because you don't know how to stop him. He can shoot from outside, he can penetrate with his left. We saw him making yesterday an amazing left hook shot, very difficult, going away from the rim. And, you know, he can, in general, I think that he's big, he deserves big credit for the good offensive game of FS. We cannot say that Misic or Larkin or all the other players that FS has, they are not talented, but I think Simon is also very experienced and he knows the European basketball really well and he knows exactly what he has to do at every moment.
Yeah, you could have, go ahead David in a second, you could have Larkin, who's been having a couple of bad games every now and then, or Misic that might have a bad game like he did, I think game one in the playoffs against Madrid, but it just seemed like that Simon is just, he's just constantly rock solid. He's that guy as a coach, you could say, every time I go out, I don't even have to talk to him before the game. I know he's got this.
Yes, exactly. And except all these players that we mentioned, Simon and all the others, I want to say also about Bobois that yesterday started the game really well. And so you can understand that FS has a lot of players that they can push the team. And this is the most difficult for the opponents. For Barcelona, let's say, talking about the final game, that you never know which player will step up and which player will be in a good day that you need to stop. Everybody is so dangerous, and this is why FS is so effective offensively and defensively. I think because we talk about their defense, FS is also a great defending team, but I want to say that when FS is good offensively, they play good defense. Yeah. They have some defensive players, defensive-minded players that they use a lot to build their defense on them and through them. But you can see that when something doesn't go well offensively, this make their defense weakest. And for FS, it's very crucial and important the flow of their offense because this gives in a positive momentum. Offensively, they play excellent defense also. So this is something that they should keep working, and I think that's the reason because that's the reason why they give up so big difference yesterday and the other games we saw with Madrid, that somehow in one moment of the game they lose their concentration mainly offensively. And this, because they don't perform good on offense, gives extra and easy points on transition to the opponents, and then start the stress and the anxious how to finish the game as fast as possible.
Yeah, I want to go to you now. I don't want to finish this conversation about this game, and we're going to move on to the next game right now, the final. But I got to talk about Coach Itudis because he did an amazing job yesterday. He did it 2 years ago in Baskonia against Madrid when his team was down like 15 or so or 14. He went to a smaller lineup. He did the same thing again yesterday. And I want to talk about him, and I want to talk obviously about a guy who's 2 years ago MVP and Will Clyburn had an amazing game and just broke down FSU's defense yesterday, single-handedly.
Coach speaks for himself and what he's been able to accomplish wherever he has been the head coach. The thing that that is always going to get my attention is consistency and what you do in those critical moments. You know, Clyburn is a very good player. I actually thought you know, he missed some opportunities to score and to further put pressure on FS, but he had a good game. And all things being said, he had a good game. But that last shot, you know,
that's my next question.
Yeah, you gotta put that pressure on the defense. That last shot, he should, you know, I was hoping he would take it to the hole, put that pressure on the defense, put that pressure on the official.
That's what he does.
You know, he scored that basket. He's either going to the line, you know, shooting two, or going to the line for an one. But either way, he's getting a higher percentage chance of taking that game into overtime. And I think in overtime, it's a maybe a different outcome.
Does everybody else agree with that shot, Coach Sinan? You agree it was not the best shot selection at that point in the game? I know every player wants to win the game, but as soon as Larkin missed that one free throw and you know it was going to be at most a two-point game, you have to be thinking attack the hoop, right? Am I right or wrong about that? Or David and I, at least we're on the same team right now.
No, for sure. I think that, you know, at the timeout, I was thinking about what FS should do is not help from Voigtman because he's the biggest threat to make that shot outside of the three-point line. And we were all expecting an attack to the basket with him being 100% field goal percentage from the inside. So I think Singleton having four fouls, he doesn't want to give an and-one or three-point foul attempt. He just backed off a little bit too much, which gave him the, let's say, courage to think about making that shot.
Tough call, man, because if he makes it, he's a hero.
I think at the end of the day, it's the personality of the players to decide which way they will go. For sure, when you need a two-point inside, it's better to go inside, as you said, to maybe to get a foul, maybe to go to the line, maybe to, you know, to play the game, you know, how you, because we saw that Clyburn was attacking one-on-one and nobody could stop him. And this is what we expected from him to do at the end of the game. He took the decision to take this shot from outside. For sure, he's counting on his shot. He missed it. As you said, whatever coaches are planning, at the end of the day, this type of games that they judged by the last shot is the personality of the players. And the players knows really well how to attack in that moment. I agree that Singleton step back and give him half step to shoot, and this is what he took that moment.
Yeah, I mean, there might be another show somewhere that's called The Crossover with somebody else that's talking about the fact that he took the perfect shot. I don't know. You know, we're, like I said, we're a little bit of old school. We want to go to the basket. But nowadays, it seems like that final shot is always the same. It's always that, like, step back three-pointer to try to win a game. It's become, I don't know.
Exactly. For me, it's very interesting for EuroLeague that we had both games finishing after a last shot. And this happened first time, I think, in the history of EuroLeague, both semifinals to finish only with after the last shot. So this is very interesting for the fans to watch. And unfortunately, as you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, we don't have fans, the fans' presence on the court.
Let's go to the championship game. I mean, right now is where we're going to listen to the interviews. I did this morning, I did an interview with Alex Abrines, and I did an interview with my man, Kurtislav Simon. I was so happy. I'm like, as he sat down in front of me, my little man crush was like, yeah, that's my man, Simon. But we're going to go listen to these interviews before we move on to the last game. We'll be right back. My man, Alex Abrines, what's it feel like? I mean, it's been such a long season, and you guys have had so many ups and downs like every other team, but what's it feel like to finally be in that championship game?
Well, we reached one of the goals of the season with this team. We wanted to play all the finals, and since now we play it all. We did it in the King's Cup in Spain, and now we have the chance to win this trophy. So we're very proud and excited about all the job we've done during all those months, and now it's the time, it's the final game.
You know, it was such an emotional game because it was like a boxing match almost. You guys came out on fire, but like, you know, Coach Aceguera just said at halftime, the defense wasn't that good. You guys had to get a little bit tougher on defense. I felt like Milan actually got a little tougher on defense. They took like a 7-8 point lead, and it looked like you guys had just lost your confidence, and then things turned around. Like, what do you feel like the most important moment of the game was when you guys turned things around?
Well, I think after the third, we just locked in on defense, especially, and we were not giving up easy points. So we practice all year for those moments. We also have games against Zenit, for example, that we had some up and downs, and we learn from it. So I think what happened yesterday is more or less what happened to us in Zenit. We're down 8 after a bad quarter, but like all the 5 players lock in and just help each other out. And we kept Milano in 11 points, I think, last quarter. So
your defense definitely won the game for you. It wasn't your best defensive performance of the season by far, but now you have a very, very strong offensive team coming up on Sunday. A team that could put up points like crazy. And we've seen it in the last couple of games that they played. And last night we saw, especially in the first half. What are your expectations and what do you guys need to do to beat this team?
Play defense, obviously. As you said, it's going to be hard because they play with high rhythm. They have players with so many points in their hands. And we're going to play much better than we did yesterday to win this final. Obviously, as you said, they can easily score 100 points. We also can score 100 points, but I think the team who plays better defense keeps the opponent below, let's say, 70 or 80 points. It's going to take the game.
You must be exhausted, man. We know you guys don't sleep during these games.
Yes, of course. Especially when you do the same thing 3 times, you know, when you lose 2 games against Real Madrid the same way, and then you are making same mistakes. But okay, most important is that we win the game, and we have now 1.5 days to prepare for the final, which is our goal.
I mean, it must feel so good. 2 years ago is a long time ago, and now to be back in the championship again, it must be an incredible feeling for you and the team.
Yes, of course. Let's start with 2019. You know, it was a big surprise for everybody that we even show up in this Final Four because people didn't count on us. You know, year before that Final Four, we were not at the last spot of the league.
Played,
so it was unexpected that we will come all the way to the final. But I think we show in these 3 years that this team is a great team, that we are playing great together. So to be again here in the final, it's big thing for us, and I hope we will put the crown on these 3 years. You know,
it's Barcelona; they're the best defensive team in the league. You guys are pretty much the best offensive team in the league. It's what any basketball enthusiast and fan wants to see: offense against the best defense. What are your expectations for this game, and how do you beat them? How do you stay away from that 10 minutes of bad play against a team like Barcelona?
Look, it's hard to say. You know, it's a great group of players, great coach. So for sure, it will not be easy. We are all aware of that. That they will play hard. We need to play hard, and I think it will be in the small details. You know, it's 50-50 game. For sure, they will do everything to win. We will do everything to win. So it will be interesting. I'm really excited that I will be part of that game, and I hope that we will win it. Yeah. Simple as that.
All right, guys, you heard from both players right there, and you didn't hear me at the end. I actually asked those questions, those guys, and at the end of the Simone interview, I said, you talked about 50-50 balls. You talked about play by play, you know, at one play at a time. You talked about small details. This guy gonna be a coach. He's gonna come take your job in a couple of years. It sounds like, man, he's already got the coaching mentality, or all those players are brainwashed by you guys.
I think both things are happening. You know, from one side, he's very experienced. From the other side, this is for sure what his coach asked from them. I believe that for the final game, two questions are has to be answered. The first is the participation of Kalathis. We don't know what will happen, if he will be ready to play and how ready he will be if he will participate. From the other side, I think that for FS team, it's very important to produce on offense. And the question, as Coach Adaman said, is about Larkin, how good he can perform having not a good game during the semifinals. For sure, Coach Adaman supported his player, and he knows, and everybody knows, we all know that he's a great player. These two parts for each team are very crucial for the final game. I think in general that we will see a very interesting game with a lot of tactics from both coaches. From the other side, I expect that players that they are very experienced and talented, they will step up for their team. And I hope that we will see a great final.
Coach, taking my job from me, man. I love it. I love when you make my job easier. Let's go off to David right now. Yeah, same thing. I'm pretty much going to ask you the same thing. Keys of the game, key players. What are you looking forward to this final? Because what we have here is what everybody says that they want. They want the best offense against the best defense. And that's exactly what we have this year. So what do you expect?
Simone mentioned about the intangibles. That's going to be critical for him, because I think he's an unseen or unglorified stabilizer for FS. He has to play well in order for FS to win. I like the fact that FS came out of this game without playing their best basketball, in my opinion. You know, for me personally, defense is going to win the championship. Anytime you have a high-powered offense, but now you take that offense and you insert the capability of being able to stop great players from scoring, that gives you a huge boost. Relative to Barcelona, Kalathis, a big question mark in terms of his health. But at the same time, they still have enough firepower to win. So if they can play great defense and stifle FS, I see them walking home with the title. But the fact that FS did not play well, that leaves motivation for them on Sunday. And particularly Larkin, I would expect big things from him. So it's a great game. I wish fans could be in the building, because it should be a lot of drama.
Sinan, losing the Final Four for them 2 years ago, it seems so long ago now. So there's not really a revenge factor. The fact that the last year of the season was unfortunately cut short, and they were the best team in the league up until that point, it still doesn't seem like there's that motivation or that, you know, I don't know if you know what I'm trying to say, but is tomorrow's game their vindication? Is it their moment? Is there their moment to say, we've been the best team for 3 years, we have to put a stamp on this thing right now? And if it is, how are they going to do it?
I think for sure it's a vindication, because they've been feeling this, they've been talking about this, and they were upset when the season got cut short, especially Ataman. And I think that tomorrow's game boils down to how much pressure Larkin will put on himself. Because if he keeps on gaining that pressure, then it might affect negatively to the other players. That's what I see from the team for the whole season. And I think that, you know, if they find the flow, if everybody touches the ball somehow, they're going to find that rhythm and they're going to have the advantage. One thing for both teams, whoever controls the tempo and whoever is sustainable on defense, they're going to find a way to win the game. Because everybody, even with missing Calates, maybe or not, everybody's capable of making plays. And we're going to see a fun battle. And I think that for me, I gotta give props to my Turkish teammate from national team, Sertaç. He has been having an amazing year. And he's actually putting a stamp on Final Four as a Turkish player to show up there and putting the effort. And I think that he has been the key for the team to stay together for the most part of the season. And it's great to see him success.
I told him yesterday I want to be his agent so I can quit this job. Hey, David and Sinan, you guys prepare yourself to make a prediction. I want a game prediction. I want an MVP prediction. I want to finish with Coach real quick. Coach, strategy-wise, as a coach, you lose your best point guard. You lose Calates. Let's talk about Barcelona right now. Who are you going to? Are they going to look for a different type of offense? Do you stick Abrines in to lead the troops? What's your philosophy on that?
First of all, I think that Coach Saras is trusting a lot Bolmaro. And Bolmaro, although he is young, he got a lot of credit from him all season. And now, if Calathis will not play, he needs to step up. He is a guy that showed already that he has big potential and he can be an X factor for this game, not mainly scoring, but, you know, playing and organizing the team, bringing the ball with safety and defending also on ball. I think he can be a good solution if they have this problem with Calathis. From the other side, for sure, he will find some small forwards, I believe, to avoid also the pressure that Efes will bring. To bring the ball and to find pressure release tricks to bring the ball and start the plays on offense.
Bamaro played 27 minutes yesterday, and during the season we've seen Anga take over the point guard position at times.
Exactly. More, they have players that they can bring the ball. Yes, small forwards that they can bring the ball and they can organize the team.
Coach, prediction. Who wins? Who's the MVP?
Don't expect from me prediction. Look, when the biggest reason not to predict the winner is yesterday's games, because both of them in the last shot. Let's say you miss one shot, they score the other team from the other side, they win the game. If you score the first, they miss the second, the other team wins the game. So how we can predict? I would like to see, as I said, a good game that will be fun to watch for all the basketball fans. And I expect, as I said, a lot of tactics, the players with experience and personality to step up and to watch a beautiful game.
Thanks to Coach. I'm going to ask David and Sinan the question in a different format. Who's going to make the last shot of the game tomorrow? I don't want you to predict who's winning. I want you to tell me who's going to make the last shot of the game tomorrow.
Listen, at the end of the day, Joe, it's coming down to who plays defense most consistently and who has the fewest turnovers.
You guys made my job easy for about 45 minutes, and now you're killing me because as an ex-player, I don't like to make these damn predictions either. You know, you don't like to do that, but Sinan, I have to go to you now. You're the last one to talk and the coach has got to go to practice.
I'll make sure that it's quick for the coach. And I have to root for my hometown team, Anadolu Efes, at this point. I can't make predictions because I want to watch a beautiful game and I want to hold me. I don't want my prediction to hold me back. But I'm just expecting a fun game and hoping that Anadolu Efes brings the cup to Istanbul.
Guys, this has been a different Final Four, a different season. It's been special in its own right. And you guys, I want to appreciate you guys and thank you so much for being here, taking out the time to be on the crossover and make it even more special for me and for everybody else. You guys' opinions are like, you guys are like gods to me. So to be able to sit down and talk to you guys has been an amazing experience. And I just hope that we get that last game just like yesterday, man, because this will be a great Final Four. And next year when we're doing this again, there'll be fans all over the place. And Coach, maybe you'll even be here.
Exactly. You thank you very much. The pleasure was ours.
Guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.